of Kissing the Sunshine Band. I'll see you in Westbury, New York, and I'm talking to Sal Solomon on Dave's Coming By on UNC Radio.
Shalom, shalom, my friends here in the radio neighborhood. This is your old pal, Rabbi Sal Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am so excited. I have my disco shoes on. I've got my boogie hat on because we're talking to one of the founders, one of the progenitors of the disco slash R&B slash soul revolution of the 1970s. His name is Harry Wayne Casey. If that name does not ring a bell, don't worry about it. You don't know him. You know the band. The band named after his last name, KC, and the Sunshine Band. And even if you're not quite sure, wait, what songs did they do? Oh, I'll tell you. That's the way. I like it. Shake your booty. Get down tonight. I'm your boogeyman. This band had 7 number one singles and 3 triple platinum albums. They've got a new album dropping in March, and they're going to be at the Westbury, I want to call it the Westbury Music Fair, but it's called something else now. Is this the place where they play in Westbury on Friday, January 23rd, which is Dave's birthday, by the way. Anyway, we are thrilled and delighted to have Harry Wayne Casey, KC, bringing us sunshine in the neighborhood.
How are you?
Shalom, shalom to you, Casey. How are you doing?
I'm actually in Hawaii right now on vacation.
Oh, wow. Aloha to you. So you're in the beautiful paradise of Hawaii. How are you enjoying your vacation? What are you doing there?
I am. I love it here. I'm just relaxing. I come here every year and chill out for a few weeks before the year starts to just gather my thoughts and be with family and friends here in Hawaii. And it's a beautiful place and it's a beautiful day and I can't think of any better place to be.
Well, you've been all over the world. I mean, yeah. Bermuda and places like, but even so, Hawaii is number one for you?
It is. And I live in Miami, and you would think, well, I have Miami. Why would I want to come to Hawaii? There's just something magical about Hawaii, and I have lots of friends here and stuff, and I've been coming here for 35 years or so. So I just love it here, and it's a great place to be.
Hawaii is basically Miami without the angry old Jews. Pretty much. They're about the same, pretty much.
Miami's changed a lot. You know, I mean, the demographics has changed. It's much more Latin-oriented now than it was before. And it's still a great city. It's a fun city. There's a lot to do. It's a 24-hour city. And, it's also a great place to come and relax if you want, or come and party, and or do both. Relax and party and, get a great tan and get out of the cold.
Now, where were you from originally? Where were you born?
I was born in Miami, Florida.
Ah, there you go. So yes. You're used to the beautiful tropical hot weather.
I am. I love it. I love it. And love the humidity. I love every part of it.
Now, when did you realize you were musical?
All my life.
Like 3, 4, your parents got you a toy, something, or what?
3 o'clock. From 3 years old, I don't know, I come from a very musical-oriented family. We were always around music. My mother and her sister did radio commercials and stuff. And we went to the gospel church, so I was really always around music. My mother loved R&B music, so it was always played in my house. And all of my family members play instruments and sing. So I was always around music. I never was not around music. My grandfather loved his records and his guitar and stuff. And, just as far back as I can, remember, everyone played and sang. And, every family get together, they sat down at the piano and everybody sang songs and played and stuff. So,
what was your interest? Was your instrument keyboard or guitar or both?
My instrument was keyboard. I mean, I dabbled a little bit on the guitar a little bit, but, keyboard is my main instrument, basically.
So when you were first doing scales and then learning songs, I guess, as a kid and then in high school, was there a particular kind of music even then you were gravitating towards, or did you have to learn classical and polywally doodle all the day or something?
Well, I mean, that was one thing. I didn't take too many lessons because I didn't want to be locked into, having to learn classical. I mean, I love all kinds of music. Mm-hmm. I was always in music, in school, mostly in the choral department. department.
Oh.
But I grew up loving R&B music, but I love all types of music, you know, pop, rock. It just depends. I mean, I like certain Led Zeppelin songs, for instance. Like some of the Grand Funk stuff was really funky. Like if it was a really funky type rock song, then I loved it. You know what I mean?
Now,
but mostly yeah. R&B, like the Motown sound, you know, the Stax sound, of course, the great Aretha Franklin, you know, music and stuff. Just all that great R&B stuff, you know,
Didn't I read somewhere that Aretha Franklin would be like your one dream person that you always wish you could play with or play for?
Yeah, that would be a great, that would be a great opportunity.
So, you went to high school. Did you go to college as well?
I went 2 years into college, and then, I broke out and had huge success, so that was the end of that.
Well, at what point were you working at the record store?
I worked at the record store from the age of about 16 for about 3 or 4 years, 3 years maybe.
And you weren't even, according to Wikipedia or wherever, you weren't even really quote-unquote working there. You were essentially volunteering.
Actually, I started at a drugstore at 16, and then around 17 or 18, I got a job at the record store.
So it was a real job. You weren't just volunteering and hanging around.
Correct.
Okay. So, and then eventually they started using you as a session musician there?
No, then the record store was a retail store, so all we did is sold products.
Oh.
Records and stuff.
So how did that translate into then moving towards forming a band?
Well, I kind of been in some bands, you know, early on in age. Nothing I ever formed. I was just in there as a singer or whatever, and my neighbors had a little group together, and I joined them sort of kind of thing. And but I basically we place an order on Monday and Thursdays and then pick them up on Tuesdays and Fridays at the wholesale record distributor.
Uh-huh.
One of the wholesale record distributors happened to have a recording studio in the very back of the building. And once I found that out, I just started hanging out there.
Oh, okay. So it was there that you were really kind of just
for hours.
Trying to show that you were really interested and not just
Correct.
Some kid off the street and et cetera. So
Correct.
Do you remember, by the way, we're talking with Harry Wayne Casey of Casey and the Sunshine Band. Do you remember the very first song that you ever wrote?
That I ever wrote?
Yeah.
I wrote a song with my cousin when I was 13 years old. I can't think of the name of it, but...
Do you remember any of it? The melody? Any line?
Oh, no, none of it. I've been writing since I was 12 or 13 years old. I always used to write, instead of, you know, my parents divorced when I was young, so I really would write, you know, instead of talking to someone about things going on in my life, I kind of used to write it out, and it would always come out like in the melody of a song or something. So I've been writing pretty much all my life. And, you know, more at that time, really just for my personal.
So, and this is where I wanted to ask about this, because I heard you had a childhood. It was difficult. You had a parents divorcing. That is traumatic for anybody at any age, but certainly for a younger person. And yet, when we think of you and Casey and the Sunshine Band, all the music is happy, let's go dance, let's go party.
Right.
Where were you subsuming, if that's the word, submerging the heavier duty your lyrics that you were writing?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, all in all, I probably wrote most of the times when I was very down and depressed, so I would either write about the situation that I was dealing with at the time or trying to make myself feel better or, you know, writing how I would like it to be. So how I would like it to be was not how I was at that moment when I was writing it. I wanted to be a lot happier and a lot more, you know, in love or loved or whatever it is. I mean, the songs that I really wrote were kind of love songs in a way. I mean, that's what I liked. It was really talking about how you like it when someone loves you, how, you know, when they whisper in your ear, when they talk to you, when they just touch you, hold your hand, that's the way you like it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So those songs were, even though they're very up-tempo, the reason I ended up doing so much, I mean, I always loved up-tempo music anyway, but at the time that I was really getting more heavy into my writing and producing and recording, music had gotten very dark, and I thought I wanted to brighten it up, and I wanted to do an album that was all up tempo, you know, no ballads on it at all. So that's kind of how I, you know, the music's just, you know,
right,
making more of a happy vibe, more of a party vibe, because I wanted to keep it all up and everything. Because I did think about, like, if you were at a party or at someone's house, and, you know, from side A to side B, it was all just up and high energy and just fun. You know what I mean? So that was a deliberate thing that I did do, yeah.
Now,
so even though I may not have been feeling that deep down inside of me.
That's fair. Some writers write the opposite of how they're feeling because it brings them out of the mood that they're in. Or, you know, they're in a wonderful mood, but they find themselves writing something very sad. It happens all the time, you know? But
writing has always taken me out of a sad situation or whatever. Or it's always resolved my feelings within myself and helped me understand what I'm going through. My own writing about it or writing about my dreams or wishes or whatever has, I think, made life a lot easier for me as a person, actually.
Great. Now, when you take a song like, you know, That's the Way I Like It, one of the great songs of that era, of that disco R&B era, and when I think of it, when I hum it to myself, I'm hearing the orchestrations, I'm hearing the whole thing. If I'm going to, That's the Way, uh-huh. When you wrote it, was it just sitting at a keyboard with that beat? Did the beat change while you were writing it? At what point did it turn into the shape that it became?
Sometimes I get, you know, a lot of times I have the title of a song or that first melody, like That's the Way, you know, I might have that, I had that first, so everything kind of flows and then kind of fits into, you know, that melody as you're recording it or whatever, and then it's decided upon at that point, you know, what the beat and everything is going to be of the record.
That makes sense. And when the record comes out, or when they're about to put the record out, like the second and third albums that Casey and the Sunshine Band did, was there any, do you really know in your heart what the singles are? Is it like no problem, or are there arguments? Like,
no, for every record that was a major hit, I definitely knew it was going to be a hit. There was no doubt in my mind that they were hit records from the moment they were finished.
What is it? Can you put your finger on what made one of your songs more?
I mean, to this day, I can hear a record and tell you whether it's going to be a hit or not a hit. I've had hit and misses, but most of the time I'm pretty right. I don't know. It's just something that that I feel and that I know that I, you know, that tells you, you know, that it could be a hit or is a huge hit.
That's fair. You guys were riding a wave for a few years. You were really huge, and your songs were all over the place. And I have to admit that I was not a fan of disco, and you don't even want to call your music.
Well,
usually.
I mean, you know, unfortunately, disco's gotten a bad rap. I don't know what the fuck for. we changed music. I mean, originally what I was making is R&B pop music. It became disco music only because a movie came out called Saturday Night Fever that was about a disco. Then all of a sudden everybody started calling this music disco music, and it pisses me off sometimes, really, that there was such a backlash against it. Today it's 2015 right now, and dance music is bigger than it's ever been. It never went away, it never died. Even in the 80s, you know, everything that came out was still danceable and more danceable than even in the 70s. And they just renamed it, they called it punk. And so, you know, all these labels we give music all the time is just...
I think that's fair. I think... Yeah.
Why do we keep renaming music? I mean, it's music.
Well, I mean...
But why we have to rename it, and it's a genre, and it's this, and, you know, music is the same music we've been playing since the beginning of time. And, you know, every 10 years, everybody's got to label it. It's the 70s music, it's the 80s music, it's this and that. You know, it's fucking music. I mean, you know, for Christ's sake.
It is. I mean, part of me agrees with you, and part of me also says, well, you know, if I want a certain kind of music, I'm going to want to tune into a particular... If I wanted to listen to classical music, you know, I'm going to turn on a classical station. I do not want or expect to hear light jazz or...
Yeah, but I mean, so what do you call it now? I mean, you have music on the radio right now that sounds like music from the 70s, which they call disco music. And it is disco music in all aspects, but they don't call it disco music anymore. So what is it?
Dance pop, perhaps.
Rock, you know, rock and roll is rock and roll, but what is rock and roll? I mean, rock and roll that was in the 50s is not what rock and roll is today. You know, and so I just don't understand why we just keep changing it or whatever. I know you have to have genres or whatever, but...
And I think that was the issue with people who had...
So now it's dance music or whatever kind of, or what do you call it?
Well, EMD or EPD, or EDM, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, it's techno, it's this, it's that, it's just crazy.
All right. Well, you are, all these years later, 40 almost years later, I guess, still doing...
I would say there's four types of music.
Okay.
There's pop, there's rock, classical... And R&B, period.
You're leaving out Australian didgeridoo.
No.
That'd be folk, I guess.
Okay, all right, five, you're right.
Five
classes, maybe six.
Six, if you know, there's some Eskimo clinging.
I'm going to give you seven categories, period. Jazz, blues, folk, rock, pop, and R&B, period.
Well, you went from four to seven. See how easy it is to...
I mean, that's really it if you think about it.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, everything's going to have a tributary. Sorry?
I mean, and classical would be the seventh. I mean, so that's really it. That's what we've got.
Right. At least for now. But people always want to try and come up with something new. And then you're going to want to put a label on that.
Right.
Oh, you left out tubing throat singing, but that's close
and
to...
And I did leave that out. You're absolutely right.
It's like the Spanish Inquisition sketch in Monty Python.
Hawaiian music, and there's Latin music. Oh, my God, I left out so many other categories.
There you go. See? Okay. Now, what people might not also know is that during the period of KC and the Sunshine Band's hugest ascent and pop stardom, one of the reasons that you didn't tour that much was you were also producing other... artists. Do you have any great stories of people that you produced or favorite moments or favorite songs that you were behind the boards for?
No, I mean, we had our own roster of artists that we had to take care of and stuff, besides keeping up with, you know, the Casey and the Sunshine Band records or the George McRae records or the Jimmy Bullhorn records or whatever else we were producing. So we were kind of, you know, Terry DeSario. So we just had our hands in a lot of things, and it just didn't lend to us touring a lot. You know, we did 30 days here and there, but not very much. I mean, I was running a business, and I worked, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, pretty much 365 days a year.
So did you, I know the drug stuff is well known, but did you burn out before the drugs or because of the drugs or during the drugs?
What? I burned out at my own decision. I was tired... of the whole industry, the political part of it, the pressure part of it, every part of it. I did not want to have anything ever to do with it ever again in my life for as long as I live.
Wow. Was there a straw that broke your back in the music? Did somebody really screw you on a contract? I mean, what really did it?
No. I mean, it's just the whole thing. Just, you know, for 10 years or 50, whatever it was, you know, I gave my heart and soul in 24 hours a day. And I just wanted to, like, stop and get back to reality and just where I was before it all happened, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just chill out, get my thoughts together, think about everything, what happened, you know, how it happened, and just kind of understand it all myself, you know, because it was just such a whirlwind and everything. It's taken me 40 some odd years to understand where I am right now, to understand kind of what happened to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, to understand the whole meaning of Casey and the Sunshine Band and me as a person and me as an artist and to be comfortable with it and you know, just it's just been a long process. And I just think it was time at that time in 1984 after Give It Up was a hit. I just did not want to be told what to do anymore, where to go, when to smile, when to be happy, when to feel good, when, you know, I was just done, Saul. I was just done. I guess you could say burnout, but, you know, I just didn't want to do it anymore. I had had it, it was no longer fun. You know, I do this because I enjoy it, and I love it, and I was no longer loving it. And when you don't love something, I think you should detach yourself from it.
But rather than just go to Hawaii and mellow out and do woodworking or something, you plunged into drugs and alcohol.
Well, I mean, I was doing a little bit of that, you know, at the end there anyway. But, you know, my father died. I had a car accident. I mean, a lot of
things
happened that triggered a lot of different situations. And I did. And, I did things in my 30s that people do in their teens. And I think I just, you know, there's a period of my life from, say, 20 to 32 or 33 that I don't even know what it's like to be a normal person. You know what I mean?
Right.
No clue. There's a 10 or 12 year period of growing up, of natural growing up, that is missing from my life. And I think I wanted to try to find that or try to fit in or wanted to fit in more. And I probably did some really stupid things.
Were you ever close to death?
I enjoyed it. It was not like, you know, it's an addiction, yes, but for me, I kind of enjoyed it, and that was not a good thing either.
Did you ever nearly overdose or get close to death or do something really nuts?
I had a few grand mal seizures. Part of that was from, I'm hypoglycemic. I found out I was hypoglycemic, so some of the drinking was causing sugar spikes in me or whatever, so I had a couple, grand mal seizures, which I guess I never was, you know, in a hospital for an overdose or anything like that. I never did it to that extent. I did it, you know, I could get high for a few days and then go for a few days without being high. So, it was kind of binge type thing, and I don't think I ever got anywhere. When I drank, I didn't drink the whole bottle. You know, I had a few drinks, you know what I mean? And so...
It's like me on Passover. I know, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
So what was the moment, though, when you said, okay, enough, I gotta get out of this? Was there a light bulb over your head?
Well, I mean, you know, I thought about it. I mean, my friends were constantly reminding me, what are you doing? Why are you not back out there? Don't you hear, have you listened to the radio? Everybody's mimicking you guys. It's you, it's your music. You know, why aren't you doing blah, 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 blah. And I just kind of, you know, yeah. And then Arsenio Hall wanted to see a reunion of us. I was watching the show one night, or somebody was watching and said, Arsenio Hall just said he wants to see a reunion of you in the band on his TV show. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, call them. So I made the call, had the call made, and it was true. And he flew us to L.A. I put a band together. And we did the Arsenio Hall show. And at that point, I realized, it was 93, I think, 92, 90, somewhere around there. And I realized that I wasn't doing what I really always loved to do. And all of a sudden, I realized that I loved it again.
Ah.
And so I started taking some dates here and there, basically with two background singers and myself, and just testing the waters and going out and doing some track shows and stuff. And I saw how those places would be packed to the max, and people were loving it. And then I started taking other dates, and then I just went at it to the band. But I was still kind of doing, you know, the drugs and stuff at the time, and I'd missed three or four. I never missed a gig, but it would take me three or four flights to get there because I said, oh, I'll get on the next one. You know, and eventually get there.
Huh.
Always on time, never missed a date. And I just, in 95, I just had decided, you know what? I love doing this, and I want to do more of it, but I can't continue doing it this way. So I had to make a choice to either keep partying and doing the way I was doing, or get off of it and enjoy this thing that I've always loved to do. And I made the choice to go into rehab. So...
Good for you. Was it
in rehab? And I was in rehab for 3 months.
Whoa! But and you came out, I assume, clean and sober. But I read that you're not.
I mean, you know, I have a drink every now and then,
right,
because alcohol was really not a major. It's not a major problem with me. I can take it or leave it, really. But I haven't taken a drug, or, you know, since 95.
With Mazel. Do you miss it ever at all? Really?
Do I miss it?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. I quit smoking 7 years ago. You know, you always have that thing where you would like to, you know, I don't know if I can say I miss it. I like having my mind where it is right now and knowing things and all. I don't miss all that part of it. No, I do not miss it.
Good for you. Good. I mean, I'm happy to hear that. That's what I want to hear, because I'm kind of a
uptight. Even to this day, if I have eggs, somebody say, well, take a tablet. No, I'm not taking any, and not, I won't take, any medicine or anything like that, but I just, I just don't, if I can get through it without a pill, I do it that way.
Exactly. We're talking with Harry Wayne Casey of KC and the Sunshine Band, which is very much still around, still doing gigs, still touring, still doing, and still making music in the studio. It's been a while, but you are going to be working on, or you will probably almost finish now, with a new album, a double album that's coming out in March?
I have finished it, and it's almost a triple album. The first part of it is coming out March the 10th, and the first part is 17 songs from the 60s.
Cover versions of other people's songs, right?
Yes, and I covered, like, Always Something There to Remind Me, Dreams by the Allman Brothers, You Really Got a Hold on Me, You Really Got Me by the Kinks.
Oh, wow.
I've done Blowing in the Wind by Bob Dylan.
Let me ask you a question. Blowing in the Wind has been covered by Stevie Wonder, Joan Baez. What do you bring to a song that has been done 400 gazillion times? What's your special take on Blowing in the Wind?
I don't know. I brought in a choir. I just, when I was selecting the songs for this album, at the time I was, at the time I was just trying to select songs. I was just selecting songs about what's going on in life and everything. I felt Blowing in the Wind made a kind of a political statement a little bit, like, how many times are we going to bomb people and all this kind of crap, and so it just, this whole album kind of relates to life as it is right now a little bit.
Okay.
And some of those songs, Lynn, still, even though they were written, 30, 40 years ago, they're still very relevant to today, lyrically.
Makes sense. But then, that's part one, shall we say.
Even more relevant now, kind of, than they were, it seems, back then.
Possibly, with everything going on in the world.
Yeah.
But the second part of the album, this is now new, original material written by you. Yes?
And I did all the lyrics and melodies of the new record.
Uh-huh.
Some of it I did the music also, the chords and stuff, but it started out with a track from a very famous DJ in London by the name of Lee Dagger. He also goes by Bimbo Jones. He's remixed Madonna, Rihanna, you name it. He's done remixes for these people. And he sent me a track over. I wrote some music to it, and once again, it just all started happening. And so he sent me over four or five more tracks. I wrote to those, and the album was born. So, and I'm up to, almost 25 original tracks right now on this other part of the project.
Give up. Mazel tov. So, but let me ask you, the music industry and the recording industry has changed so much over the past 10, 20 years. In the old days,
you can call it an industry anymore.
Right. So back in the day, you would be working with this record company. You put the album, the record company would say, okay, here's a single we're sending out. We'll promote it. You go on tour, and we'll give you a penny for every album that sells. But you also got on the radio constantly, etc. Now, what do? You're going to put out these two, three CDs. How are you going to get them out there? Who are you going to get them to?
Well, my album is being distributed by Red, which is a division of Sony.
Okay.
And, the first part comes out March the 10th, and then we are releasing a dance single in the next month or so ahead of that album and this other album. And then the other album will follow, I assume, 2 or 3 months after this this other drop.
So it's almost like three separate albums, sort of, but they came kind of out of the same idea of saying something
right.
about the world.
The original record was going to be a two-disc set. It was going to be 17 songs in the 60s and then 17 original songs. And I kind of got a little bit enthusiastic with the original stuff, and I think it's all great. And I just kind of said, I just want to put it all out there. Hopefully it's all going to come out there, all of it. But, you know, we'll see what, you know, Red says at some point. But they may not want to do a, you know, a third. But, you know, I'm ready for it anyway. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's some of the best writing I've ever done. It's definitely more lyrically and melodic than some of the stuff I've done in the past.
Great.
You know, the other songs were meant to be very simplistic and stuff, and even though these are, and I'm a commercial writer, I'm not a storyteller writer, you know, I don't tell stories, I write commercially. And so, you know, it's very danceable, there's some great R&B funky stuff on there, some a little taste of kind of popish rock, you know, and then and dance, and it's all very up-tempo and talking about love and life again.
Now, do you have a favorite song of yours that of all time that you've done? Is there one particular song that's special to you, be it really, really famous?
I don't know if there's ever one particular song that you love. You know, I mean, they're all like my children,
sure.
So it's hard to say who's your favorite child, you know, or which child do you love the best. You know, it's probably, I probably like some of the ones that were a little bit more obscure that never were like major hit records. So it's hard to nail that one down. I've always been very proud of everything I've done. And
okay.
But to say I have a favorite, I don't even know what that would be.
Well, how about this one? What about a favorite example of another artist who sampled Casey and the Sunshine?
I mean, there's been some great samples. I mean, Rob Zombie did, you know, I'm Your Boogeyman. And, you know, Beyonce did a cover of That's the Way I Like It. And there's been some, Shriek Back did Get Down Tonight, I think.
Wow, Shriek Back, my God.
Who's the group that did You Spin Me Round, Round, Round Like a Radio?
Wait, that was you guys too, that song?
No, but they did That's the Way I Like It on one of their albums.
Gotcha.
I mean, we've been covered by everybody. Sampled by everybody, and, you know, Trick Daddy had a huge hit with Take It to the House, which was, you know, a sample of Boogie Shoes. And, you know, we've been sampled quite a bit and been involved in a lot of major hit records that people probably don't know about.
And the important thing, I guess, is that generally you were paid for that. Because there are some artists who are like, well, you know, sure, it's great they want to sample my music, but I'm not going to paycheck. I assume you are legally...
When I find that out, we go after them. Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah, okay. Just checking, you know. But the one thing that I probably should have mentioned this a lot earlier, but I didn't even know this, that Casey and the Sunshine Band was not the original name of the group. There was a word missing.
Right, it was originally called Casey the Sunshine Junkanoo Band because the first record that I did, I actually recorded, you know, the band was started from studio musicians, so... the first group of studio musicians, I brought in the Miami Junkanoo Band to play on the record, and that was kind of the direction I was going to go in with the whole record, was that Junkanoo-type music, because I really loved it. It was very infectious.
That's Caribbean for people who...
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And that would be the birth of where I decided that the rhythms and everything were going to come from for future Casey records was from that group. And so... you know, so the original name of the group was Casey and the Sunshine Junkanoo Band for the very first recording, and then I dropped it after I realized it was a little bit too long to put on radio playlists and stuff.
Yeah, you couldn't even fit that on a 45. I mean, you have to do double spacing.
That was easy. It fit.
It did fit? Okay, okay.
Yes.
Well, maybe not on a 78, because those were really, you know, small in the middle.
No, it would fit on a regular label. The labels on the 78 were the same type of label as on a 45.
Really? I thought they were a little tiny. Okay, okay. Something just flew out of my head that I was going to... Oh, yeah. When people come to see you guys at Westbury, the New York something building there that used to be Westbury Music Fair, and they'll see you, obviously the founder, of Casey and the Sunshine Band. And is there, there's one other original person, yes?
Furman, who started playing percussion on the records in 1976.
So, yeah, that's pretty early back. That's so. But the other two original members are, they're gone, right?
Correct.
Everybody's always asking, what was it, Paul McCartney, what was like when John Lennon died? What was it like when Brian Jones died? They asked the Rolling Stones. So even though they're not as famous, obviously, how was it to go through the deaths of two members of a band that you...
You know, it's always very hard to go through any death. I mean, these, you know, friends, family, or whatever. I mean, death is nothing that's very easy for any of us. But life can't stop. You know, life has to go on, and you have to move on with the wonderful memories that you have and that you will always carry with you. It's always hard to lose anyone in life, period. I mean, one of the hardest part of growing older is that you're smart. Even though parts of your circle get larger, other parts get smaller. And, you know, it's part of the circle of life, and it's part of what happens.
That's right. But your decision to keep the name Casey and the Sunshine Band, because you're basically...
Well, I own the name. I mean, I created the name. The name was created before there was ever those members of the band, you know, existed.
Right, right.
Of the band.
So as opposed to, not in the sense of wanting it to be an oldies act and make sure you have that name, but just it was still you.
I was making records for me, for Harry Wayne Casey. And when I came up with the name, I thought, well, I don't know if I want to be just Casey. And I made it and the Sunshine Band or the Junkanoo Band, whatever. I just made it that way. It didn't even exist. There was no group. There was just really me and some studio musicians.
Right.
Went into the studio, hired some musicians, and made this record. So I just decided to call it that, and a band didn't even exist, you know.
So moving now 40 years later, what do you listen to? I mean, I obviously listen to a lot of eclectic music, but on the radio, do you have any favorite artists at the moment?
I listen mostly to top 40, and, you know, whoever's hot at the moment, I'm a top 40 type person. So whatever's on the top of the charts is, you know, what I gravitate to and what I like at the moment.
That's the way you like it. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I like it, uh-huh.
and just a couple more questions with the delightful Harry Wayne Casey of Casey and the Sunshine Band. What, your personal life, I mean, you're vacationing in Hawaii. I assume you have a family, you got a wife, you got kids?
No, I don't have a wife or kids.
Oh, so you're really having a good time in Hawaii. Good for you. Mazel. Why have you avoided that whole thing?
I don't know. Just the route I went.
Do you regret that, or is it just fine?
Sometimes.
Okay. Is there a special lady person in your life?
No, no one's special in my life. I'm a single guy.
Okay. Are you at least enjoying that? Are you dating people?
No, absolutely. I love being single.
Well, and you still club. Do you go out and dance?
No, I don't. I not really, no.
So what do you do when you're not making music? Any sports? Any... No, seriously. I mean, your hobbies.
I just like going on vacation, chilling out, being with friends, family.
Well, family meaning what's cousins? I mean,
her husband are here right now. Sometimes my nephews and nieces are with us.
Oh, okay.
Your cousins or other family members join us sometimes. You know, I love being with my family and my friends. When I'm home, you know, I have a company to run and stuff, so I deal with that and, you know, other things that we have going on. And, you know, I love going out to a nice dinner, again, with friends and stuff. And I'm a pretty simple person, Sal.
So, believe me,
I still live in the same house I bought 40 years ago.
Really? Mazel. I assume it's a very nice house if that was at the height of your...
Nice house. It's not a mansion. It's a very nice house. It's very simple in a very simple neighborhood, and I love it.
That's what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying a basically sober life in a nice place with good friends, good food, and the work that you love to do. I mean, you're doing... What would you have done if you had not gone into music? Did you ever think about that? What job you would have...
I would have always been in the music business. I mean, you know, I've touched on everything in the music. I did interviews. I worked in wholesale. I worked in retail. I worked in PR. I worked in bookings. I managed artists for a while.
Ooh, who did you manage? May I ask who were some people you managed? Anybody I know?
I managed acts that were at TK. You know, like Timmy Thomas, and I worked with Betty Wright for a while, and just other artists that were at TK or on my own label.
Got it.
So, and then, of course, I managed Casey and the Sunshine Band up until 1979.
Oh, well, yeah, by God, your plate was full. That's why you were working 24/7.
Right. So, I mean, I've done a lot of things. I would have always been in the music business. I was studying music in college. And, you know, I could have ended up a teacher or what. I just wanted to be in the music business. It didn't matter where I was going to end up. I would have probably ended up working for Warner Brothers Atlantic or one of those major labels at some point, doing something. I mean, I worked in sales. I've worked in every part of the business you can think of.
But it was always within the music business.
Yes.
Yeah. And last question for you. And you mentioned, and this is going back to like the very beginning of the conversation, you just kind of dropped in on the fly that you would go and listen to gospel music in the churches and stuff. Are you a religious?
I grew up in the gospel church.
Right, as a what, a Catholic or what?
No, it was Pentecostal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So are you at all religious now? Do you follow anything?
Well, I do. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in my faith, absolutely.
Okay. I'm just kidding. I mean, how often do you go? Yeah, I'm a rabbi. I mean,
I don't go to church a lot at all. Actually, at all.
Oh, okay. However, you have your own way of...
Right. I definitely believe, you know, I believe in God. I believe in, you know, all of those things and the rules and all of that. You know, I believe in all of that.
Okay. Okay. I believe in some of it. You know, depending on the day, depending on my mood. You know, I usually pick about 7 or 8 of the commandments, and I'm happy with them. The other two, I have questions. But
right.
There is no question, ladies and gentlemen, that you should go see on January 23rd, I think it's a Friday night, Casey and the Sunshine Band featuring Casey himself, Harry Wayne Casey, over in Westbury, Long Island. And also keep your ears and eyes peeled to... do you have an official website that they can go to order the new albums when they come out?
Well, it'll be on iTunes. It'll be on every, musically downloadable site that there is, I imagine. Amazon, iTunes. It comes out March the 10th. It's called Feeling You, the 60s. And that's the first part of, you know, the two parts set or whatever. And, yeah, I'm sure we're going to have it on. It'll be available at CaseyandTheSunshineBand.com also.
CaseyandTheSunshineBand.com. Everybody make a note of that.
As we bring some of them to the shows. They won't be ready in time for Westbury, but, you know, they won't be available until March the 10th anyway.
Oh, okay, well. But yeah, long before that, go see them live and in person. Last question for Harry Wayne Casey is, I asked you before, you couldn't really pick a favorite song, but is there a song lyric that you have written that you are either most proud of or is the most personal and important to you?
Well, I mean, you know, Please Don't Go is probably one of those type songs, but, you know, I mean, again, I love everything that I do. I mean, to say that one, you know, every one of them meant something else and means something to me, you know.
I mean, I didn't even mean the whole song. I mean, a line from a verse, that kind of thing.
Oh, they're all great lines. I mean, that's the way I like it. You know, Keep It Coming, Love, you know, or Shake Your Booty. Shake Your Booty was really a kind of song, a protest song in a way about, not a protest song, but a song like telling people to get off their ass and shake it and have a good time and stop worrying about what everybody else thinks and do your own thing and enjoy it and shake your ass. You know, it was really, of course, I used the word booty.
Booty, but instead, yeah, and you know what? And this is true. When Dave, who hosts and produced this radio program when he was growing up, and I, honest to God, when he was a kid and constipated, the mom would go and he'd be in the bathroom and he would sing. This as a joke, sort of, but he was saying, make a duty, make a duty,
oh
make a duty, and it worked, usually.
Oh, come on, Saul.
It's true. Okay, I can work. I guess
that did not happen.
All right, no, it didn't, but I wish it did. I wish. But what a delight, shaking our metaphorical booties here, and duties here.
Absolutely.
With Harry Wayne Casey, thank you. Much blessings to you and good music ahead and wonderful touring and a good life to you, you know?
You better pay attention to those other two commandments you don't pay
attention. You too, sir. You too.
You
shalom. Shalom to you, sir.
Shalom.